and welcome back to another exciting episode of Extra Feature Venue. Today I have a guest that comes back way too many times, but always brings me something fascinating. Darcy's Weir in the house, and he brought a fabulous friend with him, Gary King. Their new film, Crop Circle Realities, should be available soon, but they'll tell you at the end of the interview. Welcome to the show, guys.
Hey, thanks for having us. Okay, good to be here, thanks.
Okay, so Darcy, why this film? Why crop circles? I mean, you brought me UFOs, you brought me Bigfoot, now you're on to your next thing?
Well, I mean, UFOs includes crop circles. You know, the short answer for the long question here is that UFOs encapsulate many different phenomenon, and the crop circle phenomenon is just one. You know, there's people that have had UFO sightings, who've had abduction cases. Those are two separate sort of phenomenon. Sometimes they cross over. The crop circle phenomenon has been happening for a large extent, to a greater extent, in the Wiltshire area of the UK, the United Kingdom, for many, many, many years now. And I have been always fascinated by that, and I always wanted to make a documentary to cover some of the aspects. And I worked with Jaime Maussan on this, which he's been featured in a few of my documentaries. But Gary King has come along, and he really is an expert on this phenomenon and knows the history very deeply. He knows many details that people don't know. And for, I think there's been a case where debunkery has gotten involved, and they're for sure, there's been people that have been involved in making crop circles, and there's been some intricate ones that have been made, but there's certain aspects to some of the crop circles that just do not seem man-made, and Gary King has been present where a UFO showed up, or there was a UFO sighting and an event that happened called 777. And he will probably go into that later, but I wanted to profile in this documentary some of the history and some of the most incredible cases that can lend to proving that not all crop circles are man-made, and that if they're not man-made and there's UFO sightings, there may be some extraterrestrial involvement.
So, Gary, when you come onto a project, how do you broach it? Do you know what you're getting into, or are you just like, nope, I'm going to talk about this and I believe in it?
That's a question I've never really been asked. So, I really have no attachment to what people believe, in inverted commas, and I don't spend most of my time trying to convince people that there's something to this, because after 25 years of deeply exploring the phenomenon, I believe there's no... I have enough personal evidence that there's no question that the vast majority of crop circles are from a mysterious unknown origin. So when I present lectures around the world, or I make documentaries for television and so on, I spend the first 20 minutes really nailing the fact that there are major discrepancies in any theory that people go out and make these things in the 3 or 4 hours of darkness in the night. And once I've done that, and usually I take the crowd with me on that point, then I move on to what I consider to be the more fascinating subject, which is, what do they mean? And that's where I've spent, after having spent several years establishing that they're not man-made, then I moved on to the next question of, okay, this is a communication, and what is this communication trying to tell us? So when I speak on radio interviews and so on, if people want to ask me about, you know, why don't I believe they're man-made, or why, what evidence do I have, etc., well, I have no problem with that. But to be honest, it's not the most interesting of subjects to me. The most interesting of subjects is, what does this all mean?
I have to be 100% agree with you. I think your film explains why they exist and how they're existing, and nobody can prove you wrong. So why dwell on that? And I agree. I think Darcy does try to film, in the film, try to find a meaning, and I think you try to find a meaning. But I think the problem is we don't know yet.
No, it's there's a difference between a message and a communication.
Yes.
Some crop circles are messages. They're self-contained. They have some implicit, message contained within them. There's several examples of those. But then when we look at the whole campaign, as I like to call it, and that's the modern campaign, let's say from 1979 onwards to the present day, then we have five categories of crop circles, and all of those kind of link together to form what is being established as a communication, which is like a book. You open it and you don't really get to the full meaning of it before you get to the end.
So, Darcy, when you approach this kind of subject, I mean, you're obviously a believer. I'm not going to question that. I don't even want to get into that. How do you look for people like Gary and the Mexican man? I'm sorry, I've forgotten his name, but he's really into it too.
Song, yeah.
That guy. How do you find these people? Where do you look for them? Or do you know them just doing what you do?
Yeah, no. So I partnered up with Jaime for this film and previous few other films because, look, he's been doing this for his research for pretty much over 30 years. You know, he started as a 60 Minutes reporter down in Mexico City, 60 Minutos, and he was covering the UFO subject really early on. I mean, some people may know Billy Meyer as an example. This was a Swiss man that was had one arm and was somehow producing these UFO photos back in the 70s, and it kind of took the world by storm, and some are questionable, some look kind of real, but Jaime's been at the heart of this subject, covering the many different phenomenon involved with UFOs and a possible extraterrestrial connection since the early days that this has all been happening around the world. And I worked with him on this because, believe it or not, this guy has been flying over to the UK and investigating crop circles as they show up every single summer for many, many years now. And, you know, Gary has been working with him doing on-the-ground assessments and analysis of crop circles as they appear every year. So it seemed natural to me to include Gary and to work with Gary on this, because not only am I using footage that came from Gary, from a lot of his drone flyover recordings that he worked with Jaime Maussan on analyzing and showing to Mexico, but, you know, he's also been, before he even met Jaime Maussan, he was involved researching these crop circle formations in England and had a UFO experience himself. And right after that that video was recorded, and, you know, you can see this crop circle formation show up in the footage, you know, after this whole event happens. So it kind of corroborates multiple witnesses on the ground that saw this event, were present when it took place, and then, you know, there, lo and behold, we have a intricate crop circle that appears, and there was no people that were visible to create it, you know? So, pretty interesting stuff. And I think Gary's been doing this for a long time. There's other people like Andrew. What's his name again, Gary?
Colin Andrews.
Colin Andrews, sorry, who's written many books about crop circles. I wanted to make a tight documentary and include Gary's incredible evidence and the side of the story that he has presented. But, you know, maybe one day I'll be able to work with Colin Andrews. And there's many documentaries about crop circles out there. But I really want to focus on a few different aspects involving UFOs around crop circles, orbs to be exact, and then this sort of light phenomenon that happened with Gary's famous incident that happened back on July 7th, 2007.
Okay, Gary, I have a two-part question for you. One's just kind of easy to answer, and the other one may be a little more difficult. The first one is, are there any other crop circles that take donations other than that one farmer? Second question I wanted to ask you is, what is your favorite crop circle, or do you have one, or you're constantly enjoying each one, new one you see?
Okay, first question. There are several farmers. There's a mixed reaction from farmers. There are several that are welcoming to the crop circles. They see it as something that brightens up an otherwise kind of boring job that goes on every year, and that they, you know, they plant the crops, they harvest them. When a crop circle turns up, they see it as exciting and put out a donation box and allow us to enter. There are other farmers which are very hostile towards us. They believe that it's nothing but the work of vandals. And sadly, over the years, people that have turned up to visit the crop circles have not been very respectful in terms of gaining entry to the land without causing damage, breaking fences, standing on, you know, crop that they don't need to, and so on. And so it's understandable that some of the farmers get angry at what is their, you know, their main occupation, which is to grow crops and not see them be damaged by visitors who don't pay them due respect. In terms of your second question, can you just remind me what it was again?
Do you have a favorite crop circle? Do you have a one you've liked better than any of the other ones, or each one's a new experience and you love that one just as much?
I coin a phrase from my dear colleague Michael Glickman, who's now passed away. When he was always asked that question, he used to say, "It's a bit like deciding which of your children to throw out of the lifeboat."
Fair enough. That's what I was looking for. That's what I figured. You know, it's like asking me what interview is my favorite. I enjoy them all.
Exactly. They're all wonders. Well, not all, but obviously, you know, the vast majority of them are all wonders and in my view, miraculous. I have to say, my mind, obviously, 777 was a personal incident, so that has to go down as a favorite. Second to that, there was a formation which is known as the Crooked Soli Formation, which appeared in 2002. And this formation, it's of a mitochondrial DNA, which is made up of tiny squares. And there are a number of aspects to that. In fact, my colleague Alan Brown and John Michel wrote a book just about this crop circle, which contains so much miraculous information and is such a fantastic piece of design work that that has to stand out to me as one of the spectacular formations.
So, Darcy, as a filmmaker, are you ever worried about not getting to a crop circle on time, or not being the first person, or that's not a priority for you? You just want to make it there and film it.
You know, I would love to actually go to a crop circle. In terms of my actual involvement visiting a crop circle myself, I've never been. And especially with the way the world's going right now with the pandemic, I don't think travel is going to be too easy to get to one this summer. But, you know, I go on the copious amounts of reports The deep history, the many people that have spoken about crop circles in the past, and there's so much footage, there's so many pictures available for people to see online if they want to do just a little bit of research themselves. You know, there's a really famous, one of my favorite crop circles is the Arecibo crop circle. Not everybody is aware of this one, but it's a very intricate, what seems to be almost a response to Carl Sagan's satellite, the Arecibo, that was launched into space in 1974, shows a gold plate on the side of it. And in it, it shows our DNA structure, it shows the technology that we use, it shows the image of man, like our body type, and, that we use a type of radio wave to collect our communications from the stars. And there was, in 2001, what seems to be a reply, because it's basically laid out the exact same way as the Arecibo diagram that was a communication to whoever's out there in the stars. And it shows that they have a microwave communication system. They have a humanoid-type body shape. They have DNA that's a little bit different from ours. Shows their DNA structure. It's just super interesting. Have you ever looked into that, Gary? What do you think about that one?
That's a spectacular formation. It was strange to me that Carl Sagan dismissed it out of hand without really investigating it. Well, strange in a certain kind of way. But there is no doubt that it is a response to the message that was sent up by him and some of his colleagues in 1974, I think. And it details a response to our notification to whoever might be out there. And as you say, it gives us. A response in terms of their DNA with an added element of silicon. It talks about their base number counting of 1 to 10. It talks about the fact that they occupy a planet with 3 moons around it, which are all inhabited. It talks about the population. And very interestingly, the last 10th point on the message we sent out into space showed a diagram of the Arecibo telescope, which transmitted the message. In the response, we were shown a diagram of a crop circle that had appeared in exactly the same location 1 year before. So very tantalizingly, it sort of said to us that sometimes crop circles could possibly encode something which we would receive a year later. And that throws up all kinds of questions, really, with regards to how these messages are being transmitted and actually affecting the crop to be laid down in the field.
Now, this would be a question for both of you. Darcy, I mean, you've been in this field for a while. This is your third film or fourth film I've seen from you. And Gary, obviously, you have too. Do you guys have a problem with people coming up to you and saying, this is all a hoax? Like, you guys are crazy, even though you've given them very scientific evidence saying it's not? Or you just don't worry about it anymore?
I always worry about it because, you know, I try to function in society, you know, and when somebody calls you like a lunatic for creating media that shows a different side to reality, you know, hence even the documentary's name is Crop Circle Realities. I do try not to get offended, and, you know, you do have to get along with your sister-in-law and her numbskull boyfriend, but this is just not information that they're presented with usually, right? And I kind of blame mainstream media and just our whole sort of knowledge paradigm in society is based on not looking at this type of information. We worship celebrity, we worship sports, we worship mainstream scientific studies, which totally ignore this type of data usually, and we, you know, hopefully we'll get to a point one day. I hate to mention it, but it's been mentioned so much recently in the media, but like the release that happened in 2017 from the Pentagon through to the STARS Academy was basically an admission that we have vehicles or we have UFOs visiting our planet that are not from our from the Pentagon's military arsenal. So it looks like, you know, and that was all over the New York Times, it looks like mainstream media is being prepped right now for more disclosure, for a possible disclosure event, hopefully in the coming years, maybe this year. Stephen Bassett, who's somebody I work with a lot recently, he thinks that that's very possible this spring. And maybe then, if this becomes more mainstream, we won't seem like such fringe thinking outsiders that are, not to be as acceptable discussing these type of subjects. But, that's how I feel. And I don't know. What do you think, Gary?
Yeah, I mean, obviously that's a frustration. I would agree with everything that you said. the more prominent you become in a field like this, the more attacks you get or, you know, messages you get of people claiming that you're trying to sell books or you're trying to just make money off other people's gullibility and so on. That seems to be part and parcel of the work, really. I think that people's response to the phenomena is part and parcel of the communication, because I've come to an understanding that what the Crop Circle campaign is doing is it's reflecting humanity back to us. For example, there are philosophical symbols. Geometry was used heavily by the ancient Greeks to try and understand if the universe is intelligently designed, if there is an order and a harmony to nature and humanity and the world. And all of these things have been largely forgotten by us now, but when you look back, you see that a lot of work went into using geometry as a tool for understanding the order that lies within particularly our solar system so that life can emerge. And people respond to the people such as myself, I think largely by the, as you said, Darcy, the media and the way that it's covered the UFO phenomena and so on, and kind of largely made it a cultural norm. So that if you go into the pub and you say, "Oh, I just saw a UFO on the way down here," people immediately say, "Well, what drugs have you been taking?" That's a kind of knee-jerk response. But then when you speak to people quietly, they'll always tell you that they've had some kind of experience. And people act almost like dissidents, really, in closed rooms, sharing this knowledge very carefully with people they feel they can trust who aren't going to ridicule them. And so I take humanity's response to this as a part and parcel of the whole phenomenon. It reflects us back to ourselves, because this is how we are treated. This is how abductees who come forward or witnesses who come forward and say, "Oh, I've had this experience." When we see people's response to it, we can get a picture of where we're really at this time in humanity. So, yes, it's annoying, and it's frustrating. People don't listen to facts. I see an awful lot of willful blindness that goes on where people won't look at the facts when you present them to them. And again, that to me shows us where we're at, because that kind of attitude filters out, particularly these days, in all areas of politics. If you try to sit a Trump supporter down or a Brexit, pro-Brexit person down and say, look, you know, here's the facts of the situation, they don't want to listen. They don't want to see. They've already made their minds up. And that really tells me, oh, well, this is where we're at. We can't have a reasonable debate or a reasonable discourse about this anymore, because there's a lot of fundamentalism going on without actually looking at the data.
So I don't think you guys are hitting on a thing, but I do find you introduced something interesting. The Wilshire Museum, I thought was interesting that they were actually putting on an exhibit for this kind of stuff. Now, do you feel that society is now embracing this a bit more, that museums are actually going into it?
I'll leave that to you, Gary.
Sure. The exhibition is organized by a Crop Circle follower called Monique Klinkenberg. She's a Dutch lady who's been coming to the Crop Circles for a number of years, and she felt that some kind of history and pictures and information should be put forward to the public so that they can come along and view it and make up their own minds. And I totally support her efforts in that endeavor. She's moved the exhibition around in different locations, and one of them has been at the Wilshire Museum. And the Wilshire is an area which is very, very important historically to Britain. It's where the stone circles of Stonehenge and Avebury and the mystery of Silbury Hill and what the ancient people were up to in that area. This is the hotspot for those kinds of monuments. And also it's the area where farming began on the British Isles. This was the first area where trees were cleared and we began our transition from being hunter-gatherers to relying on agriculture. So it's a major historical pivotal point for, you know, the history of humanity, particularly on the British Isles, where they transitioned in this area. So the Wilshire Museum contains lots of information about that history. So to have the Crop Circle exhibition there and to say, look, this is now forming a part of the history of Wilshire, to me is a really good contribution.
Now, do you guys feel that with the museum, and I guess there must be tons of Facebook groups on this I'm unaware of, that access to information about this is growing and this will help the public to learn more about this?
Well, you would think so, yes. But the noise from the people who claim that they just go out and make them for fun on the way home from the pub each night has been much, much louder, on social media and on news media, mainstream news media. It's been much louder than people such as myself. And you just keep going round and round in circles about the issue of, you know, man-made. And in my experience, what's happened over the last 9 or 10 years has been that most people have kind of dismissed this and thought that, you know, the answers have already come in. It's been proven that they're man-made and there's nothing else to worry about here. And which is kind of sad, because lots of the information that I've become aware of and some other my peers have become aware of has not really reached large volumes of people. And so whilst it's good that exhibitions such as Monique's have been put on and people have gone along and showed an interest, in my opinion, I would say less people are engaged with the formations now than they were from sort of 2000 to 2010.
Well, I find that kind of strange, because Darcy, in the film you introduce, Jaime, I think, into he's going to offer some amount of money for somebody that can make these crop circles.
Well, yeah, under certain conditions, I think
he says
he'll give $100,000 to an individual or individuals that are able to produce a crop circle that's of similar complexity to some of the ones that are alleged to be made by, extraterrestrial intelligence or some unknown intelligence. But under the cover of night, so with absolutely no light, no headlamps, you know, using just cardboard and or a wood board and rope, and it has to be perfect or near perfect, meaning symmetrical. You know, a lot of the interesting thing that Gary has definitely witnessed in person is that some of these crop circles, they show up in all kinds of crops, you know, soybean, corn fields, wheat fields, you name it. And the different types of vegetation that you can create these crop circles in, plus the added complexity of the different inclinations and the land in which these crops are growing on. So if you take all those factors into account, and then you go ahead and you try and create an intricate crop circle that is symmetrical, that if you do a flyover with a drone, for example, looks perfect. You know, it's geometrically aligned and square and so on and so forth. If you try and do that with a troop of men in the cover of night in a certain amount of time, that's the other aspect. You know, some of these crop circles show up within, you know, less than an hour, minutes, you know, and people are saying, well, how, sure, you can get a group of men to do that in hours, but minutes or under an hour and with no light and on a soy or canola field that's on a hill that, you know, when completed, looks perfectly square and shows signs of geometry. I mean, the list goes on. It's astounding. How does that get done? And I think Gary can even explain that a bit more.
Yeah, there are when I present this kind of evidence in lectures, I use three examples. I'll go through a couple of them with you now. A couple of years ago, the beer company, the Japanese beer company called Asahi, they took part in $1 million advertising campaign to have a crop circle made with their beer label in a field of wheat. And they hired 40 professionals, surveyors and engineers and drone experts and so on, who worked on a completely flat field for 7 days from sunrise to sunset. They used tractors to cut out the wheat, the areas which, you know, were depressed. They used grass cutters, weed whackers. They hammered stakes into the ground with ribbons. They used a GPS technology called MazeScape, which is a relatively new form of technology where you upload a design to a satellite, it projects it onto a field, and you walk around with a kind of pole which beeps and buzzes to tell you where you need to hammer your stakes in. They took 7 days to make this relatively large, I think it was 750 feet long, basically a label of the front of the beer. There was another example where 12 students from the University of Oregon were hired to make the Mozilla Firefox crop circle. All of this is available online. They took 22 hours to make a crop circle which was about 200 feet in diameter of the Mozilla Firefox symbol. There were 12 of them. They used head torches. They had people flying over in aeroplanes during the daylight to sort of take pictures and come down and say, look, you need to do this area here, so they could get an aerial perspective and so on. And then when they completed it, when you looked at the quality of the crop that was laid down, because it was smashed down with boards and rope, it was all damaged and it looked like the bottom of a carpenter's, you know, shop after he'd been lathing a piece of wood. It was just trashed. Now, when we compare that to crop circles, which I've personally been in now in the last 25 years, over 1,000 crop circles, and I've been very privileged to have been present first thing in the morning, two new crop circles that have been discovered first thing in the morning. And when we walk into them, there is no damage to the crop. As soon as we start stepping into them, the crop begins to be damaged by our footsteps. So one of the questions is, how do you lay down crop without damaging it with boards? Because every example that the man-made people have ever shown us, which they normally do for publicity reasons on TV in the daylight, they always damage the crop. And they always use flat ground. And the importance to that is that most crop circles don't appear on flat ground, which means that they're not actually crop circles, they're crop ovals. Because in order to make it look like a circle from above, you have to make a circle like an egg shape. And then when you fly over it, it looks perfectly circular from above. And we've measured them to find that out. So I've been in crop circles that are on the brow of a hill inside a field. And when we measure it, it's 160 feet by 140. And when you fly above it, it looks absolutely perfectly circular because they've taken into consideration the topography of the ground. So these are questions which we've challenged the people who claim that they make them to make them for us under the same conditions in total darkness with no torches, and to make ovals and so on and so on, and to not damage the crop. And none of them have ever stepped forward to accept that challenge.
And to add to that, some of these crops still keep growing after the circle has been, the design or pattern has been laid out. So showing that the technology that's being used is definitely not a board and rope that's breaking the crop and not allowing it to continue to grow. It's something else that's literally forcing the plant to bend in a certain way that doesn't break the crop.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
So you guys have been doing this for a while. Do people still send you research on stuff, or do you guys find you're still looking for stuff? You have to do the work.
Well, I have to do research. I think a lot of this evidence comes to Gary because he's just in the thick of it every year.
Yeah, I mean, I became interested in 97 when I started. I was fortunate enough to have someone who was quite a smart guy who took me to the crop circles the first time, and he put me on the right path to say, look, what you need to be looking at is the work of a man called John Martineau. There have been some outstanding researchers back in the early days. There were some proper academics who were involved in the research who've largely gone away now. But one of them was a man called John Michel, who's an Oxford professor, who's done lots and lots of work, written multiple books on the geometry that's involved with the sacred sites in the British Isles. And another man called John Martineau, who I mentioned just a moment ago, he was also educated at Eton and went to Oxford, and during his sort of sabbatical went to the crop circles and began to analyse the geometry of them. And what I'm talking about here is hidden or implicit geometry that's contained within the crop circles. So you'll see a design and you'll think, oh, that looks lovely. But then when you work out the ratios and proportions of the elements of that design, you'll find that there is hidden geometry in it, which has solved mathematical problems that have never been solved in history before, such as squaring the circle, which was a pursuit that was vigorously undertaken by the Greeks right up until the French academics in the 18th century. They were all feverishly trying to solve this conundrum of squaring the circle. And I urge any of your listeners to go and look up the meaning and what that's all about, really. It's it's deep. It's very deep. But nevertheless, we established in 1998, my colleague Michael Glickman, there was a traditional crop circle of five dots. It looks like five spots on a dice. And they've appeared multiple times and continue to do that. But he realized that if he joined up the centers of the four satellite or daughter circles that are outside the center circle with straight lines and then measured that against the circle which was underneath, that the square, which is rational, exactly had the same perimeter, circumference as the circle that underlined it. Now, that solution to squaring the circle had never, we can prove this, Nick Collerstrom, PhD mathematician, proved to us, he's a maths historian from London University, proved to us that this solution to this puzzle had never been solved this accurately using a simple method of five circles before in history. So now we know, or I knew then, that the intellectual profile of whatever is making these crop circles is way off the charts, because it's solving mathematical problems that we've never come across before. And so my fascination continued from there to this day in looking at crop circles and saying, okay, I can see what I can see in the field, but what's hidden inside it? And what that tells us is that whatever it is that's putting these crop circles down is asking us to engage with it, if we choose to. It's entirely our choice. They're out there in the fields in the middle of nowhere. We're not being forced. They're not being pushed in our face. It's up to us. And when we look at them, and we look at them more and more deeply, we find richness and treasures hidden inside the designs. And that's what I love.
Well, Darcy, it's your favorite time of the show, so I hope I touched on everything. Gary, I ask three fun questions at the end of every interview, just so you're aware. And it's your first time on the show, so I always have to ask you the same question. Your favorite film, please?
Oh, God. My favorite film.
Darcy never warned you about this part, did he?
No. It's another throwing your baby down the bathwater, isn't it?
You can give me a couple. It's okay.
I suppose my favorite contemporary film is Arrival, because I studied language and communication 10-15 years ago at university. I went back and did a degree in language and communication, got very interested in semiotics and the Worf-Sapir hypothesis, which is contained within Arrival, which talks about a language which contains meaning rather than just symbols that represent abstract sounds from our mouths. So I suppose I love Arrival as a contemporary film, but there are many more I love.
Darcy, your favorite 2020 film?
2020 film. I really... Maybe something from Black Mirror. Probably an episode from Black Mirror. Was there a 2020 Black Mirror?
I have no idea.
Real quick. Well, there was Death to 2020. Now, you know what? I'll just say this. My favorite film that kind of covers the crop circle phenomenon, just a glimpse of it, and doesn't go deep into it, it then turns into a sort of Hitchcock-type horror thriller, is M. Night Shyamalan's
Signs. I knew it.
I really, you know, when I was in high school, I saw Signs, and I had known about crop circles before seeing that film, but I never had investigated them and never understood that there's a very real aspect to them. And, you know, long history, you know, dating back to the 18th century. So, Signs is a great film. It's definitely not, I don't think it would be accurate as an invasion tactic, but if somebody wants to understand crop circles and why they possibly are always showing up in England by the majority of them, it's probably a continuity of messaging. You know, when you start a communication with somebody, it's really annoying when they go from a Facebook Messenger to WhatsApp, to text message, to email. I think if we're engaging or we're getting messages from beyond, if they know that people are flocking en masse every summer to the Wiltshire countryside to see the latest messages they know that their messages are getting across somewhat and reaching us. So, yeah, I really like Signs, and I digress.
Okay. One phenomenon you two would like to know more about.
Probably I'd love to understand more about Seth Shostak's attempts to communicate with interstellar neighbors of ours, and the whole search for extraterrestrial intelligence, the SETI, because every time we get some exciting news of a strange communication or sound that's been received by these dishes that are all around the planet now, telemetering data back in to our research agencies for space, Seth Shostak and his team is always saying, there's nothing to see here, it's just a cosmic, you know, normality, and we're not getting any communications. But yet, here we are talking about crop circles and how they might be messages from beyond. How can you take funding from, you know, the public and seriously say that nothing is coming from beyond that's of an extraterrestrial source? Kind of, I'd like to learn a bit more about how they're doing that.
Same question for you, Gary.
You know, I feel like even after 25 years, really, I've only scratched the surface with understanding the crop circles. So the phenomenon I'd love to know more about is the crop circles, and particularly the geometrical aspect, which speaks about the fact that, as I've mentioned before, that the world we live in is not a random accident. Which implies, therefore, that consciousness is not a random accident, and the basis for that is geometrical, which, and geometry, for those that don't know, is number in space. Number is a mysterious thing. We think of number in terms of quantity, of just adding things up, but what the Greeks alluded to was that number, it existed a priori to us. We invented symbols to represent numbers, but number is all around us in five petaled flowers and 5, 8, and 13 in the Fibonacci sequence that is incorporated in nature and in our bodies and so on. And so I would really love to understand more deeply what all of this sort of stuff means in terms of the role humanity has to play. What is our role here on Earth? You know, are we just here to sell each other stuff and take part in a system of capitalism which says that we are defined by what we sell to each other and how much money we make? Or is there a bigger role? Was there intended to be a bigger role for humanity to take part in something which is quite miraculous? So the crop circles for me have been a rich source of investigating that kind of, those kinds of questions. And so I'd like to know more about that.
Your last question. What's one book you would both recommend on crop circles for people to read?
Gary?
I would say Crooked Solely, the book that I mentioned earlier that was published by Alan Brown and John Michel, talking about the 2002 formation that appeared with the mitochondrial DNA. It's a small book. You can get it on Amazon for not very much money. I defy anybody to read that book and not walk away and think, wow, this is not only miraculous in terms of how it appeared and the design of it, and the fact that there was a 200-foot circle in the center of it which did not have any center damaged, because if you draw a circle, you have to put a compass on the page, and if you mark out a circle of standing wheat in a crop circle, you have to stand in the center with your rope, and if there is no mark in the center, how on earth do you draw a 200-foot perfect circle? And then when you go on from that with the symbolism of the numbers that are contained within it, and the fact that that's all encoded into a mitochondrial DNA that squares the circle and so on and so on, you will finish this short book and think, well, maybe I need to reconsider what the crop circle phenomenon is all about.
Darcy, have anything to add?
Yeah, I would say I was switched on to Colin Andrews first, and I quite liked his book, Crop Circles, Signs of Contact.
Before I let you guys go, this is a good time to pimp yourselves out. Darcy, your film, Gary, whatever you want. I don't know much about you, so whatever you'd like to talk about.
Sure, people can check out my latest film and other films on Google Play, iTunes, Verizon, Fios, Cox, Dish Network, to name a few. However you want, you can stream it or purchase a digital copy. And if you want to check out some of my former documentaries, you can just go to www.occultjourneys.com. Got my trailers there, posters. You can click on the posters. It'll take you to a site to watch the film.
For my part, it's great to be a part of another documentary which brings information to the public about the crop circles. I talk about a number of important incidents that happened have happened over the years, my own personal experience with 777. I also talk about the Oliver's Castle incident, where balls of light flew over a field and a crop circle went down in front of somebody who was filming it at the time. There's a bunch of stuff in there which a lot of people probably won't know and will find informative.
Thank you for your time, gentlemen, and have a great day.
Thanks very much.
Thank you, Simon. Take care, buddy.